Reading is collected verses from Matthew 27 and John 18 to 19. And they bound Jesus and led him away and delivered him over to Pilate the governor. When Jesus was accused by the chief priests and elders, he gave no answer, not even to a single charge, so that the governor was greatly amazed. So Pilate said to him, "Are you king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world." Pilate said, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "For this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" Pilate went back outside to the Jews and told them, "I find no guilt in him." Besides, while Pilate was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him today in a dream." So when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but rather that a riot was beginning, he took water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See to it yourselves." And he delivered Jesus over to them to be crucified. Pilate wrote an inscription and put it on the cross: "Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews." The chief priest said to Pilate, "Do not write 'the King of the Jews,' but rather, 'This man said, I am King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
There he goes. Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. Why anyone would want such a title is beyond me. There was a time that I was proud to be known as Prefect of Judea. That was before I came to Judea. Once I came here, I swear I've never seen such a stiff-necked people. My friends warned me that this was no blessing, that it was a political wasteland. But in my arrogance, I ignored them. I was sure I would succeed where others have failed. All I had to do was show them the grandeur, the wonder of Rome, the benefits of being part of our empire. We bring roads, aqueducts, water, law, Pax Romana, the peace of Rome. All I had to do was show them. But they are stiff-necked, I tell you. King of the Jews. Did you know they received him as such? Just a few days ago, I entered the city on the exact same day. I don't live in Jerusalem. I live in Caesarea, a proper Roman city, but I have to come every so often for their religious festivals, and this time it was for their Passover. Do you know the Jews believed that they once escaped from Egypt at the height of their power? Fantasy. I've argued with my superiors that it is a mistake for us to allow them their Passover. Surely it keeps alive in their hearts the idea that one day they'll be free of Rome, but it's for that reason that I come, that in the midst of their celebration, I remind them just whose thumb they are under. And so I entered Jerusalem that day, as I always do, in the full, cloaked in the full power of Rome, riding in my chariot, flanked by my guard, all the strength and power of Rome on display. And you know what? No one saw. No one even witnessed it. It was strange. I'm used to not being loved, but surely the people come out of fear or resentment, duty. But this day it was empty. We paraded through the streets and no children, no one to look up at the power of Rome. When we arrived at my palace, there were the officials there, Caiaphas, his bunch of priests. I asked them, where were the people? They shifted eyes one to another, afraid to speak until finally Caiaphas said they went to cheer another man today, a man they believed to be Messiah. Another Messiah, I asked, again? They assured me he was no military leader, no one to worry or fret about. He was a country rabbi, a charlatan with a few magic tricks up his sleeve. Nothing to worry about. As if to assure me he was nothing to worry about. They told me he rode into the city riding on a donkey. But the irony was not lost on me, that the people turned out to cheer for a man on a donkey, but for a man in a chariot, they were absent. He is a man of the people, I thought, a man to be watched. Well, until the next day, when he proved me wrong, because if he was a man of the people, he would not have done what he did then. He went to their temple. To understand their temple, I learned the lesson my first year. It was Tiberius's first birth date while I was the governor, and I thought, I need to teach these people the value of proper Roman worship, and so I installed his likeness throughout the temple. It is a small thing. Such things are done throughout the empire. After all, the emperor is like a god unto us, worthy of worship. And the people, you would have thought that I had spit in their face. They rebelled. They sent message after message to the emperor in Rome. And I thought, that's okay. Let him know what I have done to declare his honor to the people, that I'm bringing this stiff-necked people into line. But no. He sent me a reprimand, told me to take down the images, giving him the honor. That's how they feel about their temple. But Jesus did far worse than I. He brandished a whip and drove their animals out. He overturned tables. He upset the whole sacrificial system on a festival week, no less. Then he spouted off, and he told them that they had made the house of God into a den of robbers, and that he would tear it down and rebuild it in 3 days. If he wanted to make enemies, that's the way to do it. I've never seen the chief priests and Caiaphas, I've never seen them so abuzz with hatred. So we plotted that throughout the week, wherever Jesus was, whenever the crowds would gather to him, they would send their birdies into their midst. To whisper, to ask questions, to put him in bad positions. And Jesus, to his credit, was clever. He never answered in such a way that allowed us to arrest him on the spot, but his crowds diminished day by day by day until last night he was alone with just a few followers. And so I gave my guard permission to arrest him. I knew they would bring him to me. I do their dirty work for them all the time. But I was curious. I mean, over the week I had heard about this Jesus, the miracles he was said to perform, the things that he taught. I wanted to see just what kind of man was this. My wife sent me a message. She said, "Have nothing to do with this man, for he is innocent, and his trial shall be your undoing." But again, in my arrogance, I ignored the warning. When I met him, my curiosity did not disappoint. For he was not like any other Messiah I had ever met. Most of them, they enter my presence, you know, spouting venom and hate for all that I stand for. Rome. Or some of them, once they are cut off from their support, their followers, and they realize they are about to be crucified, they come into my presence begging for mercy before I even speak a word. But not this Jesus. He betrayed no hate, no fear. It was as if he had chosen to be here, as if he wasn't arrested against his will. And he didn't seem to understand what was going on. It was as if he didn't know the predicament he was in, the outcome that could happen. His answers to questions when he gave them were cryptic. I asked him point blank, "Are you the king of the Jews?" You know what he said? "You say that I am." Mia, I don't say that. They say that. What do you say? Do you not know who I am? That I have the power to condemn you or to release you? To that he said, you would have no power over me unless it was given by my father. Your father? Emperor Tiberius? Because that is who gave me my power. And Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world. So you are a king then? And then he said the most cryptic thing of all. He said, I have come into the world for this purpose. For this purpose I was born, to witness to the truth. And those who know the truth listen to me. At that moment, I knew he was crazy. For there is nothing known as truth. I mean, true. Maybe in buildings, you can talk about something being true. You know, straight, level, able to build upon, trustworthy. In that context, there's something to be true. But in politics, you don't trust. There is no truth. There's just a cacophony of voices. He says this, he says that. And from that great noise, you choose the truth you want. You use it to tilt the playing field to your advantage and to put your enemy off balance. That is the only truth I know. It's exactly what I saw the chief priests do to Jesus. They produced witness after witness. And each one used his own words against him. What he had said about the tithe, about the tax, about the temple, even about his own identity. They twisted his words. And yet, with every accusation, I looked at this man and I saw no inciter of violence, no one who was dangerous. I kept waiting for Jesus to play the game, for him to tilt the playing field back in his level, to spout his own truth against the chief priests, against Rome even. And yet he did nothing. He stood there silently and allowed them to tilt further and further and further away. He put the verdict in my hands, not knowing that my hands were tied. I tried to help him. I learned he was a Galilean. I sent him off to King Herod. It was his responsibility. He was tetrarch of that area. But King Herod sent him back to me. 3 times I said to the priest, I find no guilt in this man. 3 times they demanded I execute him. They said, we have no king. He declares to be king. We have no king except Caesar. You see the bind they put me in. So I turned to the people. The people who would shout his hosannas just a few days before, but the crowd had turned. They shouted, crucify him, crucify him. I invoked my custom. It is always my right as governor of the area to release someone for their religious festival, an act of peace and pardon. And I put next to Jesus a murderer named Barabbas. I was sure that the people in that choice would choose Jesus to go free. But no, they shouted for Barabbas. What am I to do with this man? Again, they took up the cry. Crucify, crucify. I had him flogged. If you've never seen a Roman flogging before, it is enough to melt the hardest of hearts. I've even seen families of victims of murderers crying out, it's enough, spare him. And yet the blood lust was not satisfied. The people shouted, crucify all the more. And so I went to my seat in Gabbatha, and I washed my hands, and I declared my innocence. Except it was a lie. Do you know that about water? That it reveals lies? Again, I speak in building terms. It is a trick my father taught me. He said, if you want to know if something is level and even, simply take some water and put it upon it. If it is tilted, the water will run and you know that it is crooked. And he would say to me, Water does not run two ways. He was saying something about truth. And so this water did not absolve my guilt. It only revealed the lie that I was not a man of power. I was powerless to help. That I was, even though I sought to wash myself of responsibility, only I was responsible for this man's life or death. I just did not have the spine to carry that responsibility. I think this is why Jesus unnerved me. Because it was as if he could see past the vestments, the power, the position, and he could see who I was underneath it all, and I felt judged. I stood face to face with the truth. I looked into its eyes, and I tried to wash myself of it. And now he hangs in the distance, straight as a plumb line, and I see the crookedness of my heart. King of the Jews, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, this truth that does me no good. I cannot use it in any way. In fact, it undoes the benefit I might gain from his murder. And yet of this I am sure, that he is King of the Jews, just as sure as I am that I have killed him. The priest will not like this one bit. But no matter. What I have written, I have written. Guards, I have something to take to Golgotha.